Hi, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and I'm in the city of Corinth. As you can see, it's not in such good shape right now. It's been destroyed for a long time, at least this part of it. There's a new part of the city where Greek people actually live, and it's a very active city, and it's very vibrant. But this isn't part of that, except for us who come to visit it, pilgrims and tourists, because this is ancient Corinth. This is the Corinth from the time of St. Paul. And in fact, where I'm standing is called the Bema. And that's the place where the judges would sit, or people would come and give talks. It's in the middle of the Agora. The Agora is the marketplace. The Romans called it the Forum, and the Greeks call it the Agora. And this was a place where people would come to this very, very rich city and hold all kind of discussions and bring up various problems, express their opinions, talk. It's a living, right? So, what's the background of the city? And what about St. Paul coming here? And what did he do here? That's the kind of things I'd like to talk about in this episode. We're taking a look at a very ancient city. As a matter of fact, people started to live in this area by 5000 BC. The reason for that is, just on one side is the Adriatic Sea, or the Gulf of Corinth, part of the Adriatic Sea. That's to the west. While the Aegean Sea is just to the east. And because going all the way around Greece was kind of treacherous for ships then, and it's not so great now, and also it's a lot longer, it would save about 300 miles of travel to go through Corinth rather than go all the way around Greece, what a lot of ships would do is sail into a port on the western side by the Adriatic. They would take their luggage and all of their portage and the ship itself and pull them across this narrow isthmus. And then there's another port on the east side where they would get back into the water and go to Athens, Thessaloniki, or Asia Minor, what we now call Turkey, or the Middle East. So this was a very important trade city. And lots of folks lived here off of trade. Going way back to ancient times, the Phoenicians, you probably remember the Phoenicians, they lived on the coast of what we call Lebanon today, at the cities of Tyre and Sidon. And they were known throughout the Mediterranean world as tradesmen. And they would practice their trade and share all kinds of knowledge and information and culture with all the different cities that they went to. Now, one of the cities they came to visit quite commonly was Corinth. Even in ancient times, way before the time of Christ, you know, the Phoenicians are traveling here. And this has a very interesting touch to the Corinth of the time of St. Paul, because St. Paul comes to a Corinth that is considered a very sexually immoral place. And that sexual immorality goes back to the Phoenicians that used to come here. The Phoenicians worship a god that we are familiar with from the Bible, Ashtaroth. Remember that Moses had told the people of Israel to destroy all the images of Ashtaroth, the goddess of sexuality and fertility, and also a kind of a violent god, sometimes a goddess of war. And Joshua and the judges and the kings of Israel oftentimes would destroy those statues of Ashtaroth because she was so tied up into this fertility and as a false god in addition. Well, the Phoenicians came here and they combined their ideas of Ashtaroth as a goddess of fertility and sexuality and a goddess who encouraged the use of temple prostitutes, something we see in the book of Genesis, for instance. Temple prostitutes that would take the place of the goddess, and men would go to these prostitutes as if to go have sexual relations with the goddess. And this part of the religion was brought here to Corinth and attached to the Greek goddess Aphrodite. And they had large temples for Aphrodite, where Aphrodite would be worshipped with these prostitutes. And they were famous. As a matter of fact, the guide that I had here was explaining that on the bottom of the sandals of these prostitutes, they had inscribed in the leather, "Follow me." So that as they would walk back from the seashore, the men would be able to follow them right to the house of prostitution. This was a place famous for the sexuality. As a matter of fact, to be called a Corinthian was to be called, in the ancient world, a sexually loose person. And Paul comes to the city. Now, this is not so foreign to us, is it? We have similar situations in our own culture. Not only in certain cities, but right on television. Right on some of the other channels, not EWTN, you notice, but on a lot of other channels, you'll have a lot of sexual immorality, you know, displayed right before you. And you have sometimes to think about going to confession just for surfing through the channel. Well, this is the kind of culture that Paul would also want to evangelize. He knows that it needs evangelization, so he comes here. And that's what we start to read in Acts of the Apostles. If you take a look at Acts of the Apostles, chapter 18, where it says that St. Paul left Athens and came to Corinth. That is, he came to this very, very famous and busy city. And he came here to start to preach. Now, he wasn't here all by himself either, because it says that he met a Jew named Aquila, whose family was from Pontus, lately having come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. So Aquila and Priscilla are two Jews who came here from Italy. And as he says, the Emperor Claudius had issued a decree that all Jews were to leave Rome. Now, in fact, this order to leave Rome is confirmed by history. As the historian Suetonius wrote in his book, The 12 Caesars, in the section on Claudius, the famous Claudius of the TV series I, Claudius, and book by that name, is that there were riots in Rome at the instigation of a man named Crestus. Now, that's probably a mispronunciation of Christos, that is, Christ. And it seems to be that there was some sort of an argument going on by the Jews who were Christians and those who were not Christians, perhaps some riots, etc. And the Emperor Claudius said, "I don't care which one of you kids started it, I don't care whose fault it is, you're all getting out of here. Hit the road, pound pavement, you're gone." So all the Jews had to leave Rome for about a year, beginning in the year 49. And that puts Paul in Corinth at right about the same time. We'll see in a little bit that there's other evidence to show that Paul is in Corinth in the early 50s. So we want you to stay with us to see what Paul was doing in the early 50s and what happened in Corinth during his stay here. Welcome back. I'm still in the city of Corinth, ancient Corinth. Behind me is the temple of Apollo, one of the chief gods of this area. And we're talking about Acts of the Apostles, chapter 18. And we had mentioned in the first three verses how St. Paul had come here and met up with two other Jewish Christians, Aquila and Priscilla. As a matter of fact, we can remember the same name, Prisca, who is Priscilla. Prisca is mentioned, for instance, in Romans chapter 16, verse 3, and 1 Corinthians 16, verse 19. And it's the same woman. What's the difference between Prisca and Priscilla? Priscilla was a more familiar way to say it, Tommy instead of Thomas, whereas Prisca was the formal name for it. And she and her husband, Aquila, worked as tent makers with Paul. That's how they supported themselves. But Paul got into the evangelization that he was so famous for. As it says in verse 4, every Sabbath he held discussions in the synagogue and tried to convince both Jews and Greeks about Jesus. And that he would spend his time on the Sabbath, the day when you can't work, or at least if you're certainly a Jew with Paul's background, he'd spend the day, you know, in the Sabbath, in the synagogue, with other Jews, talking about Christ and evangelizing. And then it says in verse 5, when both Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul was absorbed in preaching the word, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Messiah. So here he's totally involved in the ministry. Where had Timothy and Silas come from? They had come up or come down from Thessaloniki, as it's called today, Thessalonica in ancient times. And Thessaloniki is a city up in the northern part of Greece, in Macedonia, one of the first communities Paul had established in Europe after Philippi. And they had been sent up there by Paul just to check on the community. He was in too much trouble and hot water to go there himself, so he sent, as usual, a couple of representatives. And that was a very important role for people like Silas and Timothy. When some of the Jews blasphemously rebuffed him, and we don't know if it means they rebuffed Christ or they rebuffed St. Paul, Paul shook his garments and said to them, "Your blood shall be on your own heads. I am without blame, and from now on I shall go to the Gentiles." So he doesn't get a good reception at the synagogue, and people don't listen to him about Jesus being the Messiah. And he's saying, well, if you're not going to accept Jesus as the Messiah, what happens to you is on your own head. That's your responsibility. I'm going to go to people who will listen. And that means he goes to the Gentiles. Now, it doesn't mean that he didn't convert some of the Jews. Some of the Jews did become Christians. As a matter of fact, it says, he went away and came to a house belonging to a man named Titus Justus, a God-fearing man whose house stood beside the synagogue. So that right next door to the Jewish synagogue is this house. Paul stays with this man. At this point, the ministry starts to get more and more active, more involved, and Paul is doing this work. And it also mentions in verse 8 that Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, and his whole household were believed in the Lord, and many Corinthians who heard believed and were baptized. Now, as a matter of fact, this Crispus also appears in some of Paul's letters, especially to the Corinthians, when he writes to them. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 14, St. Paul mentions the household of Crispus, whom he had baptized. And that is, Acts of the Apostles refers to the same gentleman. The Lord said to Paul in a vision at night, "Do not be afraid, but speak, and do not be silent. I am with you so that no one shall make any attempt upon you to do you any harm. For there are many people who will follow me in this city." Now, apparently, after leaving the Jewish community and forgetting about ministry to them, he continues to work with the Gentiles and the few Jews that had become Christians, the few Jews who had churches in their households. Remember, in these households, the Jews would, the Christians would have their services. And they would meet together. And so those few Jewish Christians that were there and the Gentile Christians were few. And it's understandable, too, that not many Gentiles were going to be really interested in Christianity at first, because this was a town noted for its sexual license and its sexual immorality. And that's addictive. Sometimes we hear people say, well, sort of let off a little steam and they'll have these affairs and sort of get it out of the system and then that'll be all set for them, right? However, that's not the way it works. In sexual areas, it's more something like addiction than it is something you just get out of your system and you let off a little steam. It's something that is, a person gets into a certain habit and a certain pattern of acting. So the Corinthian people, including the Gentiles, may not have been all that interested in being outside of their sinful behavior. And Paul apparently was somewhat discouraged. In the midst of that discouragement, the Lord himself speaks to him in a dream and gives him a word of encouragement, saying, don't be afraid, but speak and don't be silent. So don't stop. Just because you don't see the results right now, that's not an excuse for you to settle down and stop what you're doing. But rather, I am with you. So this is the same thing that, for instance, the Lord said to Moses. Don't be afraid. I am with you. When Moses didn't really want to lead the people. Here, too, the Lord mentions how he is with Paul. And not only is he with Paul, but he says that there are many people who will follow me in the city. The Lord knows the hearts, not just the outside. He knows who is open. He knows that perhaps a lot of these people in Corinth had already become somewhat tired. even sick and tired of the rut that the sinful behavior had gotten them into, and that some of them were ripe for a conversion. So our Lord tells Paul to keep on doing what he's doing. And as a result, Paul listens to that. He pays close attention to the Lord's message, and he stays a year and a half, and he taught among them. So that remains his ministry. And apparently, with that time, it seems that Paul was able to have some effect, and that this community actually began to grow. And it became a very important one because of vacation. See, Corinth is so important, and Paul spends a long time, a year and a half is one of the longest amounts of time we hear Paul staying in any one city up to this point in his ministry. And it's worth it for him to do that because of the Adriatic Sea, which is over to the west, and the Aegean over to the east. The word of God spread out in two different important directions from this place. But not everything went smoothly. Please stay with us, and we'll take a look and see some of St. Paul's problems in the city of Corinth. Welcome back. I'm on top of what's known as the Bema in the city of Corinth. And that's where the next episode in Acts of the Apostles, chapter 18, in terms of Paul's stay here in Corinth, begins. As it says here in chapter 18, that there was a certain amount of trouble of Achaia. This area of Greece is known as Achaia in ancient times. And Gallio was a person we know of from history. He was the brother of a philosopher known as Seneca. Many Latin in high school translated some of Seneca's writings, 3 BC to 65 AD. And his brother, Gallio, probably his younger brother, became the proconsul of Corinth. We know about this from an inscription that was found at Delphi. Delphi is an important city and place where they had oracles in Greece. And in Delphi, it says that he was the proconsul, that is, Gallio was the proconsul, 52. So that's perfect for us understanding St. Paul's time here in the early 50s. We believe that he's here from about 50 to 52. And it says that when he became the proconsul of Achaia, all the Jews rose against Paul. And they brought him before the Bema, the court of justice, saying, "This man persuades the people to worship." Now, Gallio would be on here where I'm standing, and he would be here to judge cases. The cases in this place is that it's raised up to be very public. The trial is not something in secret, but you know anybody can see what happens in the trial, so that it's a fair trial. And the Jewish people, after a year and a half of Paul's work here, are very tired of him making these converts, both among some of the Jews and among some of the Gentiles. So, they bring this charge against him, and they say, this man, that is Paul, persuades people to worship God against the law. Now, Paul was about to speak, and he's about to defend himself, and he liked to defend himself in front of courts because that was his way of helping to evangelize some of the judges and kings and rulers. So Gallio said to the Jews, "If this were a case of some crime or an evil act, you Jews, I would deal with your complaint as reason would demand. So, in other words, you're telling me that he is telling people how to worship God, and you're coming to me to judge this case, and you're not describing any kind of crime. He's not a thief, didn't murder anybody, he's not stealing some other man's wife, he's not lying. What is your problem here? And so Gallio is, you know, saying to the Jews, you know, settle down, let's take a look at the case. And instead he says, it is, however, a teaching concerning, or dispute concerning teaching, persons, and your law. In other words, St. Paul had been around for a year and a half, and this new proconsul arrives, and perhaps the opponents of Paul from the Jewish community thought, well, maybe the new guy won't like Paul, and maybe he'll think that Paul's doing something wrong, and maybe we can get this guy to put Paul in his place and either put him in jail or get him out of town. So that's what they're trying to pull. And the proconsul, Gallio, says, wait a minute, not so fast. He's not going to be tricked into, you know, putting Paul on trial for some such situation. So he says, since it's a dispute about your teaching, persons, and your law, you must deal with it yourself. Gallio is an expert in Roman law. That's his job. The Jewish law was not part of it. So he drove them away from the court. So he just chases them away from it. He's on this, has soldiers down below, you know, chase them away and just get out of here. Then they all seized Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue, and they beat him before the court. But Gallio took no notice. So they're still trying to get attention. They're still trying to have something happen here. And they're beating the poor guy who's in charge of the synagogue. It doesn't say who that they are. It could have been the people driving him away. It could have been some of the crowd. And it could have been the other Jews who were upset because Sosthenes, the head of the synagogue, didn't do what he's supposed to do. Whatever it might be. This is the problem that we have for the Jewish people here. And their case is dropped. St. Paul, on the other hand, is able to stay here and remain in his ministry, quite much at peace. And it says that Paul stayed there some time longer in chapter 18, verse 18. It doesn't say how much longer that time was. But then he took leave of the brethren that were here. He'd established the community fairly well after a year and a half plus. And he sailed for Syria with Priscilla and Aquila. That is, he's going to go back to Israel. That's why he goes back to Syria. See, Palestine and was part of the province of Syria. And that's what they would call the Holy Land today, the State of Israel and the Palestinian Authority. They would all be part of Syria in ancient times. So, Paul is ready to go back home and perform some Jewish pieties and also to go back to see the community of Christians. And this brings to an end St. Paul's second missionary journey. That is, he's going to be going back on his way home. This is the beginning of the end of that second missionary journey. A missionary journey that has brought Christianity to the continent of Europe for the first time, establishing communities in at least three, maybe four cities. Philippi being the first, where he baptizes Lydia, the first Christian here, and then the jailer and some other Christians. Then Thessaloniki, where he also baptized a number of Christians and had sent Timothy and Silas to take care of them and bring them up to date. Athens, where he didn't have a whole lot of success, didn't stay real long, but was around for a little bit of a while. And then finally, Corinth, where he establishes a community very well in that last year and a half of his ministry on European soil during the second missionary journey. All of us should be like Paul in being such missionaries, going where the Lord sends us, and letting the Lord open doors of opportunity, just as he did for St. Paul.